So this week we're going to be talking about ghostwriting, specifically in the arena of travel writing. Now, have you guys ever come across a piece of writing in the past that was ghostwritten? Perhaps it was something that was written by a celebrity, or it was had a byline on the top of a book that was so-and-so with somebody else. Yeah, I think it's the kind of thing that we know about in popular culture, but we don't always think about happening in the world of travel. And this is a very both fun and lucrative and untapped also area of travel writing. And so that's why I'm excited to talk to you guys about it today. And this is going to be really more overview because there's a lot that goes into doing the actual writing of ghostwriting. And I'm going to talk about the process. I'm also going to talk about how to get clients. I'm going to talk about what are the opportunities for ghostwriting in the travel world? But this is going to be kind of a one-on-one type session. So if people want more, then we can look at going more deeply into this in a later month. So we're going to start by talking about why do you even want to ghostwrite in the first place? You know, often many of us writers have spent years developing our own voice and our own style and are very happy to have finally found it. So why would you want to do somebody else's voice? And how does the pay really compare to other opportunities? Then I'm going to look at a couple different, actually more than a couple, different types of businesses that can benefit from ghostwriting that I recommend that you start reaching out to. And then I'm going to talk about that process of how you reach out to them and also how to set up the procedures for that collaboration. Because like so many freelance writing client relationships, the less that you leave to chance, the more of a long-term success opportunity you have with your clients. And I've mentioned this a couple times here and there, but it's particularly apropos to what we're talking about today. Before I was a freelance writer, I worked at a major university, and I actually was brought in originally as a ghostwriter. And I did a couple other things in my job. We also did events, and I did a little bit of graphic design, but what I primarily did, and also everybody else in my area, was that we wrote things that came out under the signature, which is sort of the academic version of under the byline, but under the signature of the president of the university. I did a big project for the chairman. We wrote things that came from the provost and the deans. So I actually had the opportunity to be trained and work in-house in a setting where a lot of ghostwriting is being done. And that's one of the reasons why when I got into travel writing, I started looking for these opportunities. And the thing is that I mentioned in the newsletter and the blog post about today's webinar that these are very easy contracts to close. And part of that is because when you reach out to somebody about ghostwriting their blog for them, first of all, they probably have a blog in the first place that they've been neglecting. So they obviously understand the importance of the blog. They try to do it at some point, and it just kind of fell off. And so they know that they should be doing it and they're not. And they probably have a little bit of guilt or perhaps anxiety about that. And the other thing is that the type of companies that I'm going to tell you to target for this are really people who understand that having their voice and their expertise shared with their clients and their prospective future clients is a big boon for their business. And so the people who get back to you about these types of gigs tend to be pretty ready to say yes, and it's just a matter of hammering out those details. So let's talk more about that. If I can get the slide to go forward, let's see. So I've got a couple quotes that I've pulled for you guys from some different sources, and none of them are particularly about travel ghostwriting. And that's good because, like I said, it's a field that's not overcrowded, there's a lot of opportunity. And interestingly, I came from food writing myself, and I know some of you, maybe not some of you on the call today, but a lot of you who might be listening at home later, also do food writing, or for you, food and travel are very combined. And there's interestingly been a lot of discussion around ghostwriting in the food writing space, less so than in travel. And part of that, I think, is that because, you know, it even happens with food blogging. If you look at the food blogosphere, so to say, that really matured a lot faster than the travel blogosphere in terms of monetization. There were bloggers who got book deals very early on, who went on to open restaurants, who now do workshops. I was just checking out a food writer and photographer that I really like, and she has a workshop coming up in Brooklyn very soon, and she's charging something like $525 just to spend, you know, a few hours for the day with her. So they really matured faster in terms of blog to business than the travel space. And it's very similar with food writing in the cookbook ghostwriting area, and also a little bit in terms of the magazine writing, in terms of, you know, articles that appear in magazines, but they say they're by a chef, and these are their recipes, and these are their stories from growing up. Those are most often ghostwritten. And we'll talk about some ways to do some similar things in travel as well. But I want to share with you some from the horse's mouth words from people who are out there ghostwriting today, because I think, you know, I can tell you about my own experiences, and I will, but it's really good to see varying people's opinions on this, because ghostwriting is a huge, huge field with so many different kind of niches of ghostwriting beyond travel versus food or politics. There's so many different formats that your travel writing can take. And something that I say a lot when I'm advising people to look into setting up ghost blogging contracts with companies is that it's actually probably going to be some of the most interesting writing that they get to do, in terms of having the latitude to really tell stories, to do narrative, to do it at a word count that you want rather than a word count that's dictated by what the magazine can manage to fit or what they have, you know, the budget to pay you. That really gives you, this type of writing really gives you the opportunity to dig into storytelling, which is something that I know a lot of you want to do. And so one of the articles that I was reading, somebody said something quite in this vein, which was, some of the best and most rewarding writing that I've done has been ghost, because in my case anyway, the lack of a byline allows my normally rather obnoxious ego to take a nap. You don't have to worry about taking the public criticism of your content. You just write. And for anybody who has a personal blog, especially a large personal blog, this probably really hits home, that when you are writing to your audience, and when, especially if you have a blog that's open to comments, or generally you're just in a space where you're in a lot of Facebook website or Facebook groups, and there's a lot of opportunity for people to kind of talk about the content that you put up, there's a lot of psychological stuff that goes into your posts. Whereas when you ghostwrite, you have complete freedom to just focus on the content at hand, to just focus on putting the words together, describing the experiences. So the other thing, of course, is the money, right? We all are here because we want to earn more from our travel writing and hopefully more, earn more in an easier way than we're already doing right now. And one of the things about ghostwriting is that it's not just better paid than many other opportunities, but the pay is easier to earn. And so I can tell you my own hourly rates about this, but I've got a great quote in here that I wanted to share with you. And this comes from an article, I believe it's in Writer's Digest, that was written by somebody that I'm going to tell you about in a little bit, who's really just made a killing travel, or not travel ghostwriting, but ghostwriting generally, and has some great books on it. And so this quote, which is from Marcia Layton Turner, who's a freelance book ghostwriter specifically, says, I ghostwrite for a number of reasons, not the least of which is the steady stream of revenue. I also find that in most cases, ghostwriting is easier than authoring a book myself, because there is less research to be done. The client slash author is generally responsible for providing background material or for pointing me in the right direction. And this is really key, because like I said, we can talk about hourly rates and we can talk about the fixed rate of pay for a lot of these things, but it's really important to remember, when you are both setting up these gigs and also quoting them, that ghostwriting should be easier than doing it yourself, because somebody else should be giving you the ideas and direction. And that can also make ghostwriting really attractive in terms of, if you have a lot of work that you're doing where you really have to do a lot of strategy, coming up with a lot of ideas, and you really have a lot of responsibility on your plate in that way, and you're looking for a place to just sit down and do the writing, ghostwriting can also offer you that opportunity as well. So let's look a little bit at the rates. So I mentioned that this quote was from someone that I wanted to tell you about, and her name is Kelly James Inger, and she's got this lovely blog, Dollars and Deadlines, which has been around just for ages, I think probably for more than 10 years now. And she used to be a big freelance writer for women's magazines. So she would write for magazines like Marie Claire or Elle. She would write often a lot about fitness. She also became a personal trainer. And she essentially opted out of these $1, $2 word style publications to move into ghostwriting a couple years ago. So here's somebody doing what essentially, you know, we all want to do. Somebody writing for the big New York magazines. Her byline is on newsstands every month. She's getting paid several dollars for every single word that she writes. And she has chosen to opt out of that and into ghostwriting. And part of it has to do with that other quote that I shared with you about ghostwriting being easier in so many ways. And part of it also has to do with the hourly rate. So this comes from, as I mentioned, the Writer's Digest article that Kelly Jamsinger had written on ghostwriting, which is quite long and covers a lot of the same bases that we're going to talk about today. But it's like also similar to this webinar, it's a bit general. She does on her website go into a lot more detail, and she also has a book on it. So if you want to dive more into ghostwriting, I'd recommend checking out her book and her website. But here's some of the rates that she has. So these are for books that are in similar spaces of writing to those that she used to write about. So health, business, nutrition, fitness. So she has received $20,000 for one book, and that works out to 33 cents a word. Now, if you think about it, like I said, she used to be earning $1, $2 a word for magazine articles, but there was a lot of back and forth, both in terms of the time spent corresponding with editors, as well as the rewrites required for each of those pieces, which drives the actual hourly rate, even though it's $1 to $2 a word, down quite a bit. In this case, she, as the ghostwriter, has a lot of trust put into her that she essentially can unilaterally do a lot of this writing. And also with the kind of book-length works that she's looking at, you can kind of get a lot of extra words in there that they don't scrutinize so closely as when it's a magazine article for a big New York publisher. But if you look at that same per-word rate as a 500-word blog post, then we're looking at $165. And I know for a lot of you, that would be a great jump up from what you're receiving now for blog posts. So another project that she worked on was a business book that was 40,000 words, and for that one she had a 38 cent a word rate, which would be $190 for a 500 word blog post. She had another one, and this is important. We're going to talk about this a little bit later, is the different types of ghostwriting in terms of whether the client has provided some writing in the first place. And Kelly's given two different examples of that. So I want to show you how that plays out in terms of the rate that you receive. So one of them here, she said she had a memoir that the book had been written already but needed reworking. And so for that, she got 22 cents a word, which would work out to about $110 for a blog post. So if you think about it, I'm sure a lot of you have been in the position where, in fact, somebody who was at one of our recent retreats is doing this for about.com, where you've been in the position where you have a client where they have a lot of old blog content, perhaps, that they want you to rewrite, or other types of articles of that nature. So in this case, $110 for 500 words, I know, is a lot more than most of you are getting for rewriting work. And that's because of the premium that ghostwriting fetches. Another example that she gave here is that she wrote another book where the client wrote part of it, and then she wrote the rest. And in that case, she got about 31 cents a word, which would work out to about $155 for a 500-word blog post. So one of the things that you may have noticed from when I was talking about my days at the university, and also is evident in Kelly's examples here, is that the people whose names are on these books, or in the case of what we're talking about, tour companies, the person who is theoretically, you know, running the show, has so much on their plate. And the stark reality of the matter is that person is rarely doing all of the things that people think they're doing. And so this is actually from a New York Times article that's on ghostwriting in the food world, which is very interesting, and I recommend that you check it out. But in this case, somebody who is a recipe developer for Rachel Ray, who works on her television show as well as her magazine and her cookbooks, said, "The team behind the face is invaluable. How many times can one person invent a new quick pasta dish?" And obviously this is very apropos to Rachel Ray, but the thing is, it also comes down to people who run tour companies or who do travel planning. And I used to say this a lot, that I wrote all about Italy, only Italy, for years and years and years, and I got out of that because I had gotten to the point where I couldn't say how to order a cappuccino or a latte that was an American latte in an espresso bar one more time. I didn't have any new ways to say the same thing. And this is one of the reasons that a lot of small business owners, like I said, they may have started blogs and they may have not continued with them, because since they aren't writers, and it is their job every day to talk to clients all the time, they feel like they don't have anything left to say on this topic. And so our job as the ghostwriter is to help them find those words. And something that I heard, I believe it was either in university when I studied literature or perhaps sometimes in a writing class, but I couldn't find a specific quote on this, but I wanted to share it with you, is that the job of the writer is to make things that everybody feels and everybody knows, but they don't know the words for, to put that down on paper. And I think that applies especially in fiction and often in poetry, but that really has a lot to do with the work of the ghostwriter. We want to find things that our client thinks, knows, feels, what have you, and translate them in a way that that person thinks is magic. And this is the thing that I know can make it a little hard if you want to get into ghostwriting, that it seems like that process from, you know, taking something out of somebody else's head somehow, we'll talk about how, and turning it into something on the paper which is better than they ever possibly could have said, seems a bit magical. And the thing is, we want that to seem magical to the client. We want it to look like something that they just don't understand. Because in a way, it is magic. It takes a lot of psychology and knowledge of the industry and whatnot. But just because it looks like that to non-writers doesn't mean it needs to look like that to you. So let's get into this. And I wanted to also say, by the way, that we've used these examples of people in different industries. And part of the reason that I wanted to show you how pervasive ghostwriting is generally across the board in other industries is to show you the breadth of the types of people in the travel industry that you can reach out to for ghostwriting. So Kelly James Inger, who I've mentioned before, had said that in this is pulled from that article in Writer's Digest, she said, "What you might not know is that most authors who hire ghostwriters aren't big egos or household names. Instead, they're professionals, think physicians, attorneys, financial advisors, who want to publish books to attract clients and establish themselves as experts in their field, but who lack the time and or ability to actually write the manuscripts." Now, this is the thing. So she's zeroed in on physicians, attorneys, and financial advisors here, but we're going to look at what the types of people with those needs in the travel writing space are. And you probably are familiar with quite a number of these types of organizations and types of people, but you just might not have thought of them as potential ghost writing targets. So there's three basic groups that I want to look at here. The first is tour companies. So I've just put a couple on here because these are ones that I wanted to give you some examples for. But the types of tours out there, I mean, they're just, you know, it's mind-boggling now how many tours there are. I've been sharing this quote a lot lately, but I'll bore you with it one more time, which is that the tours and activities market is just blowing up. As you may have seen, Airbnb has moved into the tours and activities market with their experiences. Viator has recently become a huge house, not necessarily household name, but a huge name in the market. And the tours and activities market, just in the U.S. alone, is estimated to have 68,000 businesses that are valued at $20 billion or more. So just the tour businesses that are that size, or even the ones smaller, that alone is more clients than the whole pack of us that are listening to this webinar would ever need in an entire lifetime. So the tour market alone is just enormous. And the thing is that tour companies tend to start small. They tend to be started by an individual, maybe a couple, or maybe a partnership that's not a couple, who have an interest in something, see a gap in the market, as in that other people are interested in this thing, but nobody's giving a tour about it. And then they start small. Maybe they give a tour one Saturday a month, then they start doing it every Saturday, then they're doing it Saturday and Sunday, then it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and now they've quit their job because they're having requests to do it on other days for private groups, and they have to set up a company where they can do it sometimes, and they can hire other guides to do it for them other times. So these tend to be companies that, if not now, then once upon a time, were driven by the skill, the panache, the expertise of that person who started the company. So these are really great, really ripe targets for this type of work because of that. And also because what they are doing, as in what they're doing as their product, which is tours, inherently have both a lot of stories and also a lot of questions that consumers have, as in, why should I book this tour? What happens if it rains? What kind of shoes do I need? Should I eat something beforehand? There's so many questions that customers have. And so with tour companies, particularly because they're so customer intense, as in you have not just so many customers that are coming in and out every day, but so many customers that interact very directly with somebody from the company who are getting questions. Questions or FAQs, frequently asked questions, are a fantastic place to start with ghost blogging for these type of companies because, quite simply, they're easy to capture, to polish up, to put out there, and to answer for prospects before they come in. This is a very easy sell to tour company owners. And where do you get the questions from is the next question that you guys might have. But the thing is that in almost any case, the people who are interacting, who are having questions from customers, are doing so in a way that can be very easily recorded. So either it's people who are in some sort of, not call center, but who work in the office for the company and they answer calls, or better yet, it's over emails, and so the responses to those questions are already written up and all you need to do is polish them, or the questions are happening with a tour guide who might be very easy to record. All of these sources of text, so to say, you know, once the text is written down, can very easily become blog posts. And furthermore, like I said, the expertise of the person who started the company is a very specific selling point for the tour company, and that's also easily captured because, like I said, tour guides, you can get somebody to record a tour. You can take an hour or an hour and a half tour and pull easily 50 blog posts out of just one recorded tour in terms of anecdotes that are little interesting snippets about the history of the place where they're leading the tour, or the backstory of a place that they stop if it's a food tour, or descriptions, say, of different types of Italian hams in a place that they visit on a tour, on a food tour. There's so many different little, easily compactable and selectable and diceable stories that happen on tours that this is both an easy place to start and one of the ones that I recommend in terms of if you're looking for a very long-term collaboration, because there's just so much to do and the ROI is very easily demonstrated for the business owners, because in the case of a tour company, it's not at all uncommon for somebody to be booking through the website and clicking from the blog post in a very direct path to book a tour. So this is the kind of thing where, as opposed to a lot of different types of content marketing, where they might be exposed to different mentions of the company in various places, and then in a new browser session go to book, it's very common because this is an activity that people book quickly. It's sort of a low spend as far as hospitality spend in somebody's vacation goes. It's a very easily trackable process. So a couple other options here. I mentioned outdoor adventure tours, and this is largely because during the Travel Content Con, we had somebody that was specializing in this. So I have looked at quite a few of these recently. And one of the companies that we looked at, and this isn't the first time I've seen this, was essentially using their blog as a dumping ground for customer testimonials. Now, that's bad for two reasons, because the testimonials should be somewhere where people who are looking for testimonials or who are about to book would be looking, you know, whether they're looking for testimonials or they just could be influenced by testimonials at that time. So testimonials would be much better served in a different location. But second of all, when somebody goes to a company's blog, they're looking for more curated information. So one of the things that can really work for a lot of these different types of companies that we're going to look at, but is especially good for tour companies, is a case study style blog post where you might say, and I'm using the outdoor adventure tours here because it had some really good examples. You might have some people, for instance, who are afraid of rafting or skydiving or something, who come into it feeling like they aren't sure. And you can take the testimonial and rewrite it as a case study of how people in the tour company that you're writing for help this person to then have that great experience and wrap up the blog post with the testimonial. And these are posts that don't have to be very long. that can be 300 to 500 words, depending on how long the testimonial are, and you, as the writer, can write them very, very fast. So this is another type of blog post that you can do from the voice of the company owner. So rather than saying, you know, so-and-so wanted to go on blah, blah, blah tour and wasn't sure, and writing it all in this very third-person kind of way that case studies are often written, you write it in the first person. You say, when so-and-so called me, because you're writing as the company owner, about rafting with their family because it was their wife's favorite thing to do when they were small, they told me that they personally, I'm going to say he because they is weird in this instance. So he told me that he personally had never been rafting and was very afraid of it and wanted to make sure that we went on some docile rapids. And over the course of planning the private trip for this family, we were able to work out a path that showcased this natural attraction and that scenic viewpoint while still keeping in the boundaries of what my client, the husband, was okay doing. And then you include the testimonial from the husband saying he never knew that he would enjoy it, that this was the best experience he's ever had with his family, and he plans to come back every year. So that's how you can take another type of text that's already written, which is a customer testimonial, and still turn it into a first-person story. Now, one question that often comes up with ghostwriting is, well, but you don't know what was said on that phone call, or you don't really know exactly what the exchange between those two people was, so how can you write it up? And this is the same question that we have with writing articles. Well, what if I didn't take notes on what the barista said to me about the coffee, and I just kind of have some general notes, but I don't have his exact words? Can I still call it a quote from him? There's various ways that you can do that in journalism, but when you're ghostwriting a blog post for a company, as long as the company owner signs off on it or the person that you're ghostwriting for, it's totally fine to put words in their mouth and to essentially make things that you don't have firsthand knowledge of into a proper narrative arc, into an interesting story. So let's look at the next subsection of organizations that you can do blogging for, ghost blogging for as a travel writer. These are brick-and-mortar travel locations, and we think a lot about boutique hotels, I think, because when we go on press trips, we are often either visiting them or staying in them. I can't tell you how many site visits where they kind of parade you around a hotel and tell you about all of the square footage of the ballroom and the amenities and the spa I personally have been on, but these are really great options for us as ghost travel writers, because all these venues are competing in this incredibly crowded marketplace, whether they're wedding venues or hotels or attractions. And for them both to stand out once someone's interested in them, and particularly to stand out for people who don't even know about them and can't find them, a blog is an incredibly valuable asset to show the expertise of the staff, as well as the unique opportunities and amenities of the location. And with, especially with hotels, but also with venues and attractions, you can ghostwrite as more than one person. And this is kind of an interesting trick. Rather than just ghostwriting as the owner, let's say we're talking about a wedding venue, which is like a dude ranch, okay? So rather than just ghostwriting as the owner who has had this property for four generations in his family, you can also ghostwrite as his wedding planner, and you can also ghostwrite as his wrangler who, you know, helps the bride and groom get on the horses for their adventurous wedding photo shoots. You can ghostwrite for more than one person in one business, and what's very cool about that, on the one hand, is it's fun for you as the writer because you get to play with different voices. It's kind of like you get to be an actor writer in a way. But on the other hand, it also gives more depth to the company's blog because it looks like more people are involved in the customer-facing aspects of the business, and they are. They're involved with the customers that actually show up on site, but now you're making those people accessible to people who haven't yet been to the venue. And it also shows that the company has a lot going on, because when you're ghostwriting as just one person, or when you have a blog even that's not bylined by anybody and it's just the corporate tone, the reader is interacting with one person, right? They're interacting whether it's, you know, the corporate tone or with the actual owner of the company. And they don't know what the size of the company is. They don't have a sense of how established it is. But when you're giving multiple voices in that blog, it creates this community feeling that from a psychological perspective can be very powerful in pulling people in terms of them wanting to be part of something. So a couple opportunities specifically for types of blog posts that you can do for these things. I put wedding venues on here because I cannot even tell you how many wedding locations are just springing up out of nothing in tiny, tiny communities all over the place. When I used to write for a lot of travel trade magazines, I was often looking up meeting venues in places that were very rural locations where I thought, you know, I'll be surprised if I can find anything halfway decent besides, you know, the Spring Hill Inn and Suites Hotel. And there was just an enormous number and variety of people who were opening up formerly not used or only privately used venues for weddings. And part of that is because it's a big business. So when you're blogging for wedding venues, that's also a great monetary opportunity for you because they really do charge enough, and you can just go on their websites and check how much they charge. But they definitely charge enough to be paying you to be doing their blog. And when you're ghost blogging, either as the owner of the venue or as the wedding planner, it's so important for brides who are coming in to feel like they really have a connection to a place. And that voice, that personal voice rather than the company voice on the blog, is a huge step towards doing that. But then what should you be writing about? So when you're having a wedding venue blog, which is first person as opposed to third person, that gives you the opportunity to take those case study style blog posts that I was talking about and put them into effect. And so, for instance, in this case, with the wedding venues, you could talk about how somebody wanted to plan their wedding and it had a unique challenge. You know, maybe she was going to have more people, or she really wanted to have the wedding in one part, the reception in one part, and the dinner in another part, and they were quite far away. And then you can talk about how you met that challenge using horse-drawn carriages and all these different things. But what happens, and this is how you sell it to the client, is that by showing these case studies, you're showing potential bookers, potential clients, what they could do, and also how you work with them to customize things. I used to have a lot of venues tell me if I would ask them, you know, what they do for a tour. So this is less so in the wedding area, but more just in terms of attractions. What they do with a group on a private tour, they would always tell me, well, whatever you want, or they're all completely customized. I used to get this from so many museums, and I'm just like, okay, fine, I understand that you customize it, but I need some example that I can tell people in this article that I'm writing about what they're going to see on your tour. Like, you need to tell me something. And so that's the same feeling that a lot of customers, especially with weddings, like, you have perhaps on Instagram or Pinterest or whatever your own personal lookbook of what you're thinking of, but you don't know if that's possible or what's possible or how flexible the venue is at the place that you're looking at. And so having those sort of case studies for a wedding venue is a huge selling point. And like I said, they totally have the money for you. And with weddings, there's another, with wedding venues as well as boutique hotels and also with attractions, there's another type of really great blog post that I recommend pursuing, which is the backstory blog post. And so this is the kind of thing where you take a tiny, tiny, seemingly insignificant detail in the site, in the physical space, and talk about how it got to be there. So perhaps, you know, it's an interesting sculpture or other interesting architectural element, or perhaps it's the furniture, which was sourced from somebody's grandmother, and so on and so forth. But you take essentially a snapshot, a tiny slice of something in the physical space, and dig really deep into its history. This is also called an object lesson. And this is the kind of thing that works much better as a first person blog post than as a third person blog post. Because when you write as the owner saying, oh, well, when we found out that we were going to get this property, it was very sudden and we weren't prepared to fill it with all this furniture. And so My wife's mother said, well, let me talk to our great aunt because I know she has all of these antiques that she is probably going to get rid of at some point. Maybe she'll just give it to us early. And you can essentially just go through the story of how something in the venue came to be. And these stories don't have to be completely complex and incredibly narrative. They just need to be giving personality and life and three dimensions to the venue. And so with boutique hotels, these are often in historic spaces where the stories might not be specifically those of the current owner, but perhaps they're stories of the past owner, or people who used the space for different purposes before. But you can still do that story in the first person voice of the present owner. And with stories, the way to get them from the owners or the staff members is either just by hopping on quick, easy phone calls and interviewing them the same way you would interview them people for any article that you would be doing, or you can also, similar to with the tour guides, have them record themselves when they're telling these stories to other guests and things like that. There's a lot of different ways that you can source these stories. And another thing that I put on here, attractions, I specifically put especially small and quirky ones, and I wanted to qualify that a little bit. So when we think of attractions, I think we tend to think kind of one of two things, or well, three things. We think of major landmarks, like for instance here in New York we have the Statue of Liberty and the Empire State Buildings. We think of natural attractions, you know, in the terms of Mount Rushmore, the Grand Canyon, and then we think of theme park sort of attractions, something in a Harry Potter world kind of vein. But there's a lot of attractions that people visit or have interest in that really don't get so much attention from travel writers, especially travel writers who are doing content marketing. And these are often things that are very rich with stories. So it might be a pottery workshop that has, since the 1930s, hosted some of the country's top potters and residents, or perhaps has been in the same family for four generations, and now the four different siblings of this generation each have a different pottery style. Or it could be a historic home, and in that case there's often tours going that you can record to get great stories from very easily. But with attractions, like I said, it can often be very useful to take this multi-ghost-written author approach. So some blog posts might be from the guest relations coordinator. Some blog posts might be from one of the tour guides. Some blog posts might be from the group activities planner. And like I said, this multi-author ghost-written approach can be a lot more fun for you as the writer, but it also has the added benefit that you can charge a premium for it. And as I mentioned in the blog post and the newsletter that led in today's call, there's a lot of things about ghostwriting that you can charge a premium for. And one of them is when you aren't allowed to even mention that that person is your client. Another one is if they want to buy exclusive rights to the words. But another one is, and this is a great option to add, as I said, it's fun for you and it's a lot more useful as well for businesses of a certain size, is these multi-author ghostwritten blogs. So that's definitely something that I recommend that you guys look into. So the last category that I want to talk about in terms of companies that you should approach are travel planners. So there's different people, or when I say people, I mean organizations, but there's several different types of companies in this arena, and like the other list, this is not a complete list. So I wanted to start by talking about award travel planners, award travel bookers, largely because a lot of them already have their own websites, and so it's a really good way for you guys to go and see the type of content that a company that does travel booking of some sort should have on its blog in order to entice customers. So award travel blogs are this area of the travel industry that is so far ahead of most travel blogs in terms of monetization, and I mention this often. So similar to many travel blogs, they talk about destinations, they do reviews, they do trip reports, they do roundup posts, they do travel tips, but then they also do a lot of monetization of the service variety, and that is often award travel booking. And so what award travel booking is it means that, say you have accumulated points for years and years and years that you want to use on your honeymoon, and you want to get first-class round-trip tickets for you and your significant other to the Maldives, and you want to stay in an overwater villa, right? This is the Maldives dream. I did this on my own honeymoon, and I got food poisoning in India and didn't really see any of it, but it's the Maldives dream. So say that's something that you've always thought of. You have your points. You go to book it, and you look on Delta, and it's going to cost you 500,000 points each for those flights. And you say, oh my God, I don't have that many points. Why did I think this was possible? I've saved all these points for years. What am I going to do? So these award travel bookers, what they'll do is you tell them all the points you have and what you want to do, and they have an incredible amount of knowledge in terms of exactly which flights have how many award seats, that you need to book this flight on Delta through Air France rather than directly through Delta because it only costs 1/3 the number of miles. All of these things they just have at the tip of their fingers. And so they'll charge you $100 a person, and it'll take them 5 minutes to book those flights for you. So they have the monetization completely down, and they've built up these enormous blogs to funnel business to them through this expertise. So one who has quite a lot of people writing for him and also a large amount of destination content that's not around travel blogging is the Points Guy, also referred to as TPG. But another really great one that I recommend is by Gary Leff, and that's L-E-F-F. And another one is Million Miles Secrets. So those three are really some of the bigger travel bloggers out there who all have concierge businesses that I recommend you check out to see the breadth of the type of blog posts that can be done for people who have various types of travel booking businesses. But there's several other types of travel booking businesses. So one that I mention a lot, because these are a really great target for ghostwriting, is the group, the sort of subset out there known as concierge travel planners. And this is always a term that kind of confuses people who aren't familiar with this group, so I want to explain it a little bit. So somebody who is a concierge travel planner acts as a concierge sort of in the same way that a hotel would, except not on demand all the time. So if you think about the concierge at a hotel, there's somebody who has a lot of information about different activities, you know, the best person to go to if you need your shoe fixed when you're on your vacation, the person who can get you theater tickets, who can get you restaurant reservations, all of these things, right? Who can recommend a driver to you if you're in India and you need to be driven around for the day. So these concierges in hotels are very similar to concierge travel planners, like I said, in terms of the different types of knowledge that they have. However, concierge travel planners tend to do more or less in one go, often through a couple different phone calls with a client, the entire trip plan for clients. And usually it's individuals, sometimes it's groups, but essentially these are people who plan trips for people of a certain income level who can pay for those things. And sometimes they're really not as expensive as you'd think. They're charging similar to the award travel bookers. They're charging a flat fee for the conversation, and then they take a commission off of the things that they book for you. But these people trade on their expertise, on their personality, and on more or less their black book. And I looked at this in one of the other calls, but they're often a bit reluctant to share the things in their black book. But if that's the case, there's still a lot of things that you can do in terms of ghost blogging for them. You can have them talk about experiences that they've had in the region. You can do something more along the lines of not exactly an itinerary, but them talking about their perfect day in a place and not name exact venues, but talk about how, you know, they would go to this garden and then they would have this sort of pasta for lunch, and then they would have a gelato, you know, of this flavor in this season because that's the best time to get this flavor, and they would check out the Uffizi, you know, at this time of day because that's when there's fewer people, things like that. So these people, like I said, they really trade on their personality and their recommendations. So they're a very good place to start, a good target group. However, and I'm going to mention this in a little bit when we talk about the process, is that you need to have either a very high level of expertise as a ghostwriter or a lot of experience in the place where they operate. So concierge travel planners tend to have a specific geographic area of expertise, whether that's, you know, like the English countryside, or, you know, there's some concierge travel planners that are more adventure, even though they're high-end. So it could be, you know, Banff National Park in British Columbia, but they typically have a certain geographic area where their whole MO is that they know everybody and they know all of the best things. So you can start looking for ones that match up to geographic areas that you know well and reaching out to them. Another subset of travel planners is group tour operators. And there is an astounding diversity of group tours out there right now. And I don't just mean by age or by interest group. There are group tours that are operated by banks. There's group tours that are operated by alumni groups. Afar does group tours. There's so many different types of group tours. And there's a lot of companies that specialize specifically in group tours. And a lot of the different types of blog posts that we've talked about can apply to blogging or ghost blogging for group tour operators. And also the technique of blogging as multiple people. So you can blog as different tour guides as opposed to just the company owner. But another thing with group tours is that there's often a lot of questions. And this is the same with the award travel bookers and the concierge travel planners, of course, but traveling in a group inherently has more uncertainty than when you have a specific itinerary that's designed just for you, which is the case with the other two. So those sort of customer service FAQ style question blog posts can really do very well with the group travel operators as well. And with travel agents, this is an interesting thing. So if I'm sure some of you have been in a situation where you're on a press trip sort of thing, which is called a FAM trip or a familiarization trip, and you're on it not just with writers, but you're also on it with travel agents. Travel agents tend to take a lot of trips themselves to check out places, to see the hotel, to figure out which are the best rooms, what they want to recommend to their people. And so one of the things with travel agents is that a very good type of post that you can do for them is the type of trip report post or the, you know, hidden gems I uncovered here type post. And similar to what I talked about with the weddings, this is the kind of thing that by showing some examples of what you have in your repertoire, you're showing potential customers what the options are for them, while at the same time inviting them to come and discuss with you what would work best for them specifically. So I've talked a lot about ghost blogging because it's very easy to get into, especially if you've had your own blog in the past and have some expertise in blogging. But I just want to point out, we talked earlier a lot about books because ghostwriting of books tends to be a more well-known field. But there's so many different types of ghostwriting in travel that you can do. And I've mentioned apps on here because this is something that I've seen a lot of companies getting into is apps. But in terms of ghostwriting, one of the big ones is often newsletters because many companies, especially small companies, really like to have that come out under the signature of the business owner. But you also have to think, right, how do people get on the list to get these newsletters in the first place? Sure, it's past customers, but what about people who aren't customers yet? So you can also ghostwrite ebooks or email series to get people to sign up for the newsletter in the first place. And then, of course, like I said, there's the area of books, which can be, I say in here, authority or vanity. So a vanity book would be the kind of thing that a hotel or a wedding venue or an attraction might have on site, on venue, which is talking all about the place itself. Whereas an authority book would be something more written by, you know, a concierge travel planner about the region that they're familiar with in terms of travel tips that establishes them as an authority in that area. Other things that are more or less blogging but not on one's own blog that are also authority building are articles on Medium and LinkedIn, which you can do using essentially the same blog post that you're already writing for people. And then social media posts. This is another one. And I always caution you to be quite careful about getting into social media writing or social media posting for companies just in terms of the time involved. But if you're already doing ghost blogging, it's a very easy large squidge sideways to pull some text out of there to put into social media posts for your client. And another one is trade magazine articles. So this is one of these areas where I mentioned earlier that Rachel Ray has her own magazine and a lot of those things are quote-unquote written by her, whereas they're actually written by other people. And there's a lot of the trade magazines that we've looked at, you'll see sections that aren't really open to freelancers because they're written for free by people who work in the industry for exposure. And for them, they're happy to have that exposure because they're not professional writers. But the kind of interesting catch-22 here is that because they're not professional writers, they're not very good. And so a lot of times they will have professional writers ghostwrite those pieces that they are having published for exposure. So that's another thing that you can get into as well, is writing for magazines as a ghostwriter under the pen name of the people who run these travel companies. So I want to talk a little bit about the process. So how you break in is very similar to what we've talked about in other types of blogging, and especially for those of you who caught the webinar a few weeks back on how to sell blogging as a service. So you would be pitching these people cold. You're not ever, pretty much ever, I don't think I've ever seen in travel this kind of thing advertised for you to be ghostwriting for a company owner, because they don't want their competition to know that they're using ghostwriters. So you would be cold pitching the owner as you would with other blogging gigs, but your prospect list needs to be quite focused around companies that would benefit from ghost blogging, meaning that the personality of the company is important as a selling point to prospective customers, and particularly ones that already have blogs or newsletters, if you want to go that route, in place, because the process of getting that set up for a small company can take a very long time, even if you're doing it in the off season, if they haven't already started down that road. And as I mentioned, authority in the field that the company operates in, or in ghostwriting. You can go one or the other. So if you have a background in ghostwriting or blogging, you can kind of move sideways into some different things. But I really recommend for your first gig that you approach like this to take companies that specialize in the same things that you specialize with for your prospect list. So I mentioned that we'd get into this, and there's really three levels of ghostwriting. Similarly, in editing, you'll see people talk about structural edits, developmental edits, line edits. There's a lot of different types of editing, and that's very similar to the different levels in ghostwriting. And again, it's important to note here that you should be charging differently for different things here. But oddly, it doesn't just go up or go down. The middle should actually be the least expensive part. If somebody fashions themselves a writer and has, 1,700-word stream of conscious, sentences aren't complete, beginnings of sentences are in lowercase. I say this from personal experience. This isn't just me making things up. Things that they think are blog posts that they want you to polish up for them or rewrite, that can actually end up taking you much, much longer than just writing a good post in the first place. And part of that is because the idea that started that piece of ineffectual writing is inherently flawed. This is the same problem that comes up and that I've no doubt talked to several of you who are on the call about, where when you start to pitch an article idea to an editor, and I look at that pitch, we often end up not discussing the words of the pitch at all because the idea isn't right for the magazine, it's not narrow enough, it doesn't have a good enough time peg, it needs to be in a different format, something like this. So if somebody has a bunch of things that they've written or they want to write it and give it to you, I recommend declining that because you're much more likely to generate blog posts that are effective in their aim, which is to get people to book, whether it's an attraction or a travel planning session or a tour, if the ideas are generated in the most effective way in the first place. So what I really recommend is this second category. And I've sort of edited it to say it's less their ideas in your words than collaborated ideas in your words, or ideas that have their input. Because the last category on here, your ideas in their words, kind of the reverse of their ideas in words, is inherently a little tricky because two things can happen. If you are essentially coming up with the ideas and writing the blog posts with a very high degree of autonomy, there can either be a lot of micromanagement, which makes your hourly rate go down, or a lack of micromanagement, which makes the end result not so palatable to the client. And both of these are slightly dangerous things, and you can manage the process, but I've always found the happiest medium to be where there's some collaboration in terms of the vein of the ideas, how they're sourced, perhaps a shared list that you work from together, and then you write the words based on that and based on their style. And I've done this both in travel, and also I ghostwrote a blog on freelancing for several years, and as I mentioned, at the university. And I've always found that when there's that bit of input, of buy-in, of ownership, but not too much, from the person who gets the author credit, they tend to be much happier with the end result because they think it was their idea, even if you're managing up and really changing their idea to be in line with what will resonate with people. So in that vein, like I said, the most important thing that makes the difference between this their ideas and words, their ideas, your words, or your ideas and words, is the division of labor and the process. And so it's really important in your discussions, but particularly in your proposal and in your contract, to be excruciatingly clear on who provides what to whom and when. So what that means is how far before the posts come out do the ideas need to be agreed upon, and how long before that do you need to present the ideas to the client? Do they need to review the post before it gets scheduled? If so, how much time do they need in advance to make sure that they get it back to you with enough time for you to make the edits? Who is putting the post into the content management system? Who is finding the photos? Who is selecting the tags and the categories? Who is responsible for the final editing? So when I do ghostwriting, I'm typically responsible for the final edits on that thing, and I schedule it and it goes out. And so what that means is that I work with an editor or a copywriter or a proofreader or whatever to edit those things for me, so that I can always say to the client, you know, this gets a second pair of eyes before it goes out. And that also kind of saves me from being ultimately responsible for that text. And I really recommend that you do your ideas in batches rather than going back and forth every week about what the idea is going to be, because you're going to want to kill yourself at the end of that process, because you're going to spend so much time on email with this client. And you're also encouraging them to be more involved in the process and more communicative than makes sense for your hourly rate. And similarly, it's really important to clarify how many revisions are allowed. So I think with clients, I usually do one round of revisions. Perhaps in the early stages, I do up to two. And that's on the posts, not on the ideas. The ideas need to be essentially back and forth and we're done. Because I see this a lot with graphic designers, I think, because they have a codified way of doing the back and forth. With writers, I think you essentially just have a lot of emails and you don't really think about the stages or the number of rounds of revisions that you have. But with graphic designers, they tend to give, say you're working on a logo, they tend to give an array. So they first would give the client like some very different logos. And then the next step is to take the ones that the client liked and to give a couple similar ones to that. And then they have to pick one, and then they get five or six versions that are similar, but very, very slightly different, and they have to go with that. And that's it, and they don't get any more rounds than that. And I've seen graphic designers essentially cut off clients who want that first stage, the many options stage, to go on for too long. So it's very important with your clients to not only set clear expectations, but to have them in writing and in something that's signed and agreed upon, like your contract. And similarly with the technical tasks. I talk about who selects the photos, who uploads the photos, who puts the entire post into WordPress in the first place. So those are some points in particular. And if you have the six-figure travel writing roadmap, my book, or if you don't have it yet, I recommend it for this purpose. Because in the back, in the appendix, I have four different examples of proposals. Several are for ghostwriting, to show you how to delineate and negotiate and spell out these different aspects. So that's all that I've got for you today. So thank you guys so much for joining me today, and I hope that you guys have had a lovely Labor Day if you're in the US, and that you have a great weekend.